One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm Matt. I talk, and with me are two other people who talk. First up, Liz Harper, editor-in-chief of the site. Hi, Liz.
Howdy.
As you can see, talks. Can't beat it. Also, another person who talks, Joe Perez.
Hello. Did you know a pea is neither a pea nor a nut? A peanut is neither a pea nor a nut?
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Words are hard.
A pea is a pea.
That's true. A pea is a pea.
But anyway, yes, he is correct.
It's been a long week.
Peanuts are neither peas nor nuts.
It's Tuesday, Joe. You know it's Tuesday.
That doesn't contradict his statement.
Doesn't contradict it at all.
Anyway, so yeah, we are here doing the Blizzard Watch thing, talking about Blizzard Entertainment, its many games, and its foibles lately. We're going to still end up talking about some foibles today. Sorry, guys. But we're going to try and actually talk about games first. Diablo 2 Resurrected, the beta, is August 13th. I believe it's the early access beta. Is this August 13th? And, I mean, I'm looking forward to it because Diablo 2 Resurrected, when I got to play it before, was really good. And so I'm hoping to get to play more really good Diablo. And that will be nice. The pre-order thing is up right now. You basically, if you pre-order the game, you've got a better chance to get into the open beta early. Do you have a post on the site about it?
Yeah, I think 100% if you pre-order, you get into the early beta.
Yeah, that's what they're saying on the website.
So there you go, 100% chance. If you just want to get into that beta, pre-order the game. Like I said, when I played it, one of the things I noticed is that this is very much them trying to do right by the original game. Very little has changed. Graphics are, of course, much better. But the gameplay is more or less the same. They've made a few changes for console because you'll be using a controller instead of a mouse. But those changes are minimal. And they put in the stash from Diablo 3 because, let's face it, people just created their own stashes by creating a ton of alts they never played. And they're just skipping that. They're like, nope, you just have a stash. It's fine. So that's basically the only significant change I can think of is the stash. Everything else, it's like, no, pretty much the original game.
The one thing we did talk about in staff chat, and I think Liz pointed this out, Liz P, that they're not going to be supporting TCP/IP direct connections, which is a thing that I think some people may be upset about, but it's what used to allow folks to directly connect to somebody else's computer without having to go over an internet service provider to a third-party server or centralized server location so that you can create private games and host them. But technology has moved to the point where that's generally not a good idea anymore. It's not exactly secure, and servers are good now, so they don't need to have that anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, TCP/IP, that was when you couldn't do stuff over the internet.
Most people were on dial-up. Yeah.
So it was
the proto server hosting back in the day.
So yeah, I get that that'd be an issue for some people who really just want the absolutely old school experience, but you can still play the original Diablo 2 if that's really what you want. You don't have to play the remaster. If you want to just do games like that, you still can. So yeah, I get it, but really, doing that in 2021 would be like if you were like if Ford had to come out with a you know servicing guide to Edsels. You know, we don't do that anymore. That's
deep cut. But yeah, no, yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right.
But yeah, so I'm excited. You guys excited?
Very much so, considering that Diablo 2 was the game that I physically burned through CDs because I played them so much and you needed to have the CD installed to run the game back then, to the point where I bought the game, I think, 4 times when it was out and killed, I want to say, 6 of the Logitech, like, gaming mice, the first Logitech gaming mice. I think it was, like, the MX-100 or something like that from back in the day. Yes, yeah, I'm excited. Yeah. I spent a lot of time in that game world.
I'm really excited to be going back to playing an Amazon because I thought that was a really interesting gameplay style. And like you could play in Diablo 2, you could play an Amazon with a bow or with a javelin. So you could, like, instead of using a bow, like you use with Demon Hunters in D3 or with Rogues in Diablo 1. You could have a javelin and you just go around with like kind of this spear like thing and you could get into melee and just be stab, 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 which was kind of satisfying, but you could also go at range and throw your javelins like ammo. And I just thought that was interesting and fun to be able to go back and forth from melee to ranged and be kind of different depending on where you specialized. And yeah, we don't really have that anymore.
Yeah, I miss some of those weird builds that you used to be able to do in Diablo 2 as well. I remember we talked about this, I think, at one point in the podcast way back when, but like I'm really excited to get to play a druid again in that format. Not that I'm not excited for like playing a druid in Diablo 4, but I have very fond memories of summoner builds. I have very fond memories of like werebear builds that I would absolutely love to play again because it was just unique for action RPG at the time. I mean, it was basically the granddaddy of action RPG, really. But I want to experience that again. I really do.
Yeah, I do think that it's interesting to play this game now because design has gotten very different.
Mm-hmm.
And not always for the worse. I think some games do things that Diablo 2 did better than Diablo 2 did them. Torchlight, for example, does a lot of things Diablo 2 did, but it does them in a less punishing, grueling way. But I think I've compared it once to the Beatles. Like, whatever you feel about the action RPG field, like there were action RPGs before Diablo, and then there were ones after Diablo. The ones after Diablo are all like Diablo. Like, it doesn't matter how they differentiate themselves, and they all do differentiate themselves. The stamp of Diablo was placed over the genre. Before Diablo came out, action RPG could mean the Philips CD Link games.
Oh, God. You had to bring that up, didn't you?
Yeah, yes, I did, just to hurt you.
We're going to bob some badongos.
Yeah, not good games. Go look them up sometime. But seriously, the field was just anything that you could call anything action RPG as long as it was an RPG that had some action elements in it. After Diablo, it was like you basically would just say like Diablo and people would be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it really cemented like the isometric view. It really cemented a lot of the skill tree building, a lot of the action elements with how you attack and interface with spells, the looting system, and like even modern day, like you're pointed out, like it does have that stamp over the genre. There's games that have released within the last couple of years that are still pretty much Diablo 2 with a different skin.
Like, yeah, like Path of Exile,
Chaos Bane,
absolutely Chaos Bane. The one that they put out for Darksiders.
Yeah, which was a fantastic game, by the way.
Oh, yeah, it was very good.
But it was Darksider Diablo.
So at this point, though, I do want to move on to something else, because one of the reasons that we're so glad Liz is here is because Liz plays Hearthstone regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe and I don't. And that means every time someone asks a Hearthstone question, we kind of stare at each other for a while and go, So right now, I'm going to be getting some liquid to refresh myself, and Liz is going to be talking about Hearthstone, and we just give her free rein here. Liz, talk about whatever you want.
Well, kind of the new thing in Hearthstone, we had a new expansion last week, United in Stormwind, which I think has been really cool and fun. It has lots of really weird cards. We did an article recently that talked about some of the just bizarre cards in United in Stormwind, and one of them, like, there's a rogue card that you put it in your deck, and when you play the game, it makes it look like you weren't a rogue. Your opponent can't tell that you're a rogue. Your opponent thinks you're playing something else until you play a rogue card. And then it's like, oh, you're a rogue. And that's just so in character, but so just strange and bizarre in a card game. But kind of the big issue, the big controversy, I guess you'd say, in Hearthstone right now is quest line cards. The expansion added quest lines, which are like a quest. You play it, and then you have to do certain things to complete it. But a quest line is you do a few things, and you complete this stage of the quest. And then you do a few more things, and you complete that stage of the quest. And then you do a few more things, and you complete this stage of the quest. And the rewards for each of these little quests get bigger and better. And the end reward can be something like, hey, this has totally won the game for you. That's it. I hope you had fun. And it has been, some of these have had a really interesting, not great effect on the game because they encourage a real OTK playstyle, one turn kill, where you can just not even engage with your opponent. You just focus on finishing your quest. And then when you finish your quest, it's like, okay, I press the I win button and I do 36 damage in a single round without setting up anything on the board or playing any combo. It's just, I've completed my quest. Now I'm going to, heroes in Hearthstone only have 30 health. So you can do over 30 damage in a single round by completing your quest. And sometimes you can finish these quests pretty early. Not all of the quest lines are like this. What was it? I know Warlock's really bad right now. The Mage, Warlock, and Demon Hunter are all pretty rough in that they can be like, they're really killer if you finish them, and especially if you finish them early and your opponent just has no chance to respond to this stuff because you're just hitting that I win button when you finish the quest, and it makes a game that's not very interactive. Your opponent is never really engaging with you because they don't have to. They can just focus on doing their quest. And you can't stop them necessarily.
Yeah, I wanted to ask. So basically, you'd be playing the game against someone, and they're doing things that don't make sense, that don't have anything to do with what you're doing, and then all of a sudden, they just push a button and kill you.
Basically, you can see that they've played a quest. Like, you have to play, there's like a card that you play to start the quest. So they can see that you've played a quest, and they can see the requirements for the quest. But it's like, you can't do anything to get rid of a quest once it's played. And there's not really a lot you can do to stop your opponent from completing it.
So you have to try and basically kill them before they kill you? Like, you have to try
to
play
your game. you're really trying to just, let's kill them as fast as possible and hope we can kill them before they kill us. Like the priest quest line. The priest quest line actually hasn't been getting a ton of play. I think because it takes a long time to complete. It requires you to play a lot of minions of specific costs, so you literally can't finish it until turn 10. But the final reward for the priest quest line is a card you can play, and the effect of the card is destroy the enemy hero. That's it. That's the effect. And the warlock quest, which has been doing really, really well in the meta, is like you do damage to yourself. Warlock in Hearthstone is big on doing damage itself. They have kind of a life tap thing, and a lot of their cards will do damage to them. So it's like each step of the quest is you take some damage, and when you take this amount of damage, you deal damage to the enemy hero and you heal yourself. And it's just each step is like, take this much damage, then you, as a reward, you deal this much damage to the enemy hero and you heal yourself by this much. And then it's like, take more damage, deal more damage to the hero, to the enemy hero, take more damage. And the final step of the quest gives you a card that for the rest of the game, damage you take damages your opponent. So you just wait until you get to that card, and like all along, you are you're doing damage to yourself, but you're also, the quest also gives you stuff to heal yourself. So you're not doing too bad. And then you get to like, and you can do this on like turn 5. You get this card down and it says any damage you do to yourself also damages the enemy hero. And you just slam down all of this self-damage stuff, which would usually be bad to play in large quantities. And it's just like, bang, enemy dead. And it's like, there's nothing, you can't do much about that. You can't stop your opponent from playing cards that damage themselves. And Warlock has a hero power that damages themselves. So they can just zoom through this quest and wipe you out really fast. And you don't have many alternatives except to kill them faster than they kill you. And when you can complete a quest by turn 5 or 6, that's, you don't have a lot of time to even respond. So a few of these quest chains have been a real difficult hurdle. And we think Hearthstone, the dev team, is going to do something about this because it's made the kind of the meta really weird that you like, you jump into a game and it's like, oh, I don't even know why I'm playing this game. Some people have called it solitaire because you play your quest and then you ignore your opponent and you just do your quest.
That doesn't really sound like good emerging, like engaging gameplay, like at all.
I think that's the problem, is they've, quest lines, when they were rolling that, sounded really neat. It's like, oh, you have this little thing that you kind of do on the side as you play, except it's become a thing that has replaced playing. You do the quest line and you skip all the stuff where you play with your opponent. And Phil wrote about this earlier today, and one of the things he pointed out is that Hearthstone doesn't have an ability for counterplay like you would do in Magic or Runeterra.
Yeah, it's also very limited in its deck size, too, which also lends it to a certain, like, direction, right?
Yeah, but it's like, you cannot take any actions on your enemy's turn.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Magic, you can do things like counter, you can do responses. When your opponent does something, you can do something in response, like, immediately with specific kinds of cards, right?
Yeah, yeah, so, like, as somebody who's just recently gotten back into Magic, that's accurate. Like, you have basically instants and counters and things like that you can play and interact with on your opponent's turn, which I always thought was interesting that Hearthstone never had anything like that.
Hearthstone does have one thing kind of like that. It has secrets. You can play a secret and something will later trigger that secret. Like if your opponent does a certain thing, then the secret will come into effect. But
it's not like the same, mages, though. You like,
yeah, it's not the same. It's not active. You have to predict. Like, mages have a counterspell secret, and you can put it down, and it sits on the board. Your opponent doesn't know what it is, but when they play a spell, it counters the spell.
Right, but you don't have you have no control over what spell gets countered. Yeah.
Yep.
But I also think that was part of the original design philosophy for Hearthstone. Not to stick on Hearthstone too much, though, but I remember that being like one of the talking points about it was that, yes, these are smaller decks. It's quicker gameplay. It's bounce in, bounce out. And this is before they started doing all these grand adventures and quests and all these other things. And it seems like almost like from the beginning, some of that is maybe making some of the later things that they tried to do a little more difficult to pull off.
I think if the quest reward card wasn't like basically death to your enemy,
yeah,
it would be fine because people would still have to like pay attention to what their opponent was doing.
Yeah, maybe.
But since you know, if I just finish this quest, I will get the ability to like turn my opponent into a frog forever. Or what have you. I don't know the things, but you get what I'm saying. Because the reward is like literally, as you pointed out, like one, it's like one turn kill. It's like one shot kill. Once I get this, you're done. I think that if you're going to leave it where you don't have the ability to do anything about it, I think it would be kind of interesting if there was a card that could like be used as a cooldown, like in a World of Warcraft, where like, so you're going to take a ton of damage. You would have the card in your deck and it would automatically like play when you're about to get destroyed by something. Like if this will take you below your, you know, if this will kill you, this card plays and you only take half damage, like shield wall or something.
Yeah. That, I mean, you can kind of do that with secrets, but you have to play them in advance and you don't have control.
I mean, literally just a card in your hand that would do it. That kind of thing. Either have that kind of thing or don't have a card that just insta kills people. I think that's, if they make a change, that should be the kind of change they make. These things should be important and powerful, but they shouldn't just wipe you out. Because then it's like, you know, you're not playing me, you're playing the quest. You should still have to play me. You should have to, like, beat me, not just beat the quest and then use the quest reward to destroy me. One possibility could be to make them more defensive. Like, imagine if you got up one of those things that just made you invulnerable to all damage for a round or something.
Like, the thing is, it's the quests that are the quest lines that are getting played a lot are only the quest lines that are like, I'm going to instantly destroy my opponent. And the quest lines that are more balanced and not insta-kills and just give you interesting interesting abilities or useful tools to do different things or buff you up, if those aren't getting played, people are just ignoring the ones that aren't like super overpowered. So like, where's the balance between having something fun and engaging and interesting to add to your gameplay and having something that's just so powerful it obliterates anything your opponent could do?
And that's just a problem with like TCGs in general, right? Like,
yeah,
that's something that's always existed. I mean, like, and I've heard people talk fondly about like the old days of Magic the Gathering, but a lot of people forget that there was a turn two and kill like from the very beginning, since alpha of that game, right? So like, that's always kind of a weird thing with TCGs in general, is where is the balance point? And for some it's deck size, for some it's the ability to interrupt things. There's ones that are trying to do like whole new gameplay. Keyforge is another one that like just recently came out like a couple years ago at this point, might have been longer. I don't know. Time is weird. But it tries to do sort of that engaging gameplay where you still have a goal and your opponent's whole purpose is to stop you from accomplishing that goal while they go for the same goal, which is forging keys. And so like, you interact in ways that are like interrupts or creature disruption or stealing their ember or things like that. But it feels way, way more interactive. And the way that they balance it is, instead of you getting to build a deck, all of the decks are pre-conned and they don't change, and they have like, that's how they found their balance point. So you buy a $10 deck and that's it. It's yours. It's registered to you. And that's what it is. But it has, you still have that interactive gameplay between people, and they try to keep it balanced out with another thing called chains, which is limiting your draw or hand size based off of how powerful your deck or abilities are. So give your opponent a chance to catch up without completely getting obliterated. And it's one of the few TCGs that I've played that really tries very, very hard to find that balance point. And I don't know how you do that in Hearthstone. Like, Hearthstone always felt like that quick, mobile TCG. And this is not a shot. Like, if people love Hearthstone, like, I'm all for it. This is just an observation, where it was built around that idea of quick play. And unfortunately, part of the idea of quick play is giving those combos that are possible with cards in smaller decks, so you draw them more frequently, that just instant kill or do a ton of damage or put you in an overwhelming position. So like, that was always one of my criticisms of it, just as a thing. And I don't know how you fix that. I don't know what the right way to do that is.
I really always felt from the beginning that Hearthstone needed some kind of reaction system where you can respond to your opponent's actions. And I mean, you're right. It wasn't designed that way. And they added these secrets that you can play as reactions, but not every class even has any secrets. Only certain classes have access to secrets. And so it's weird. It really limits the ways you can counter your opponent. I mean, I enjoy Hearthstone a lot, but yeah, the current meta, it's weird. If you meet someone playing one of these quest lines, it's just not super fun to play. And hopefully we'll figure this out. Hopefully they're going to change up the balance or do something towards not just one turn kill every time.
Okay. I think we've probably discussed Hearthstone to the point where I need to make us talk about something else, unfortunately, which means I have to be more engaged. But one of the posts we did fairly recently, it was last week, but it was near the end of last week. Burning Crusade Classic is apparently on their PTR taking the spit emote and toning it down. They're not taking it out of the game entirely, but you can only like slash spit at NPCs or just at nothing. You can still use a macro that's basically uses slash spit to say someone spits on someone else. You can still do that. I'm kind of hoping they deal with that. But for right now, you're not allowed to spit on other players. And I think, I mean, I wrote the article, and the thing I wrote was good, because it's gross to spit on people. Just straight up, ugh, not good. But I thought we might get a more nuanced response from the other two people here. So I'm going to start with Liz. Liz, what do you feel about this? Should this be just in Burning Crusade Classic? Should it be everywhere? What should happen with this?
I mean, why, what good is there to be able to spit on other people? And I mean, there are lots of ways that players are, you know, toxic to other players. And it's like, we don't need to build in tools that make it easier to just act like a jerk to another player. There's no good reason to spit on another player. So why is this in any of the versions of the game at all? We don't need this.
Dang, I was hoping that would go longer. Joe.
So this is one of those things where I think there's a whole series of emotes that never should have been in the game to begin with, but it was a holdover from them trying to add more RP aspects into it and whatever the case was. But like, there's like, I don't know, tons of emotes that I think even when they were implemented, could have just been done without, like slash rude. There's a lot of slash rude emotes that I think had to be changed years ago. And still some that probably should be culled, because they're really bad gestures still. And slash spit probably should just be yanked. Who cares? Like it's such it's not important to the game. It's not an important thing to have around. Just get rid of it. I'm glad they're doing something about it because, I mean, logging into a game and just having, I don't know, hypothetically speaking, 60 ghouls sitting around slash spitting at you because you said something mean about somebody who controls their reins. Not exactly a great experience. Yeah, no, just get rid of it. Just be done.
Yeah, I mean, I understand in some cases people will always come up with the edge case where it's justified. And I've even had experiences in the game. Like, I remember going back to, like, original vanilla World of Warcraft. If you've ever done the Hunter quest chain for Lock and Rock, it is hard. It was really hard back in the day because a lot of times people were playing the game on computers that today we wouldn't even use to, like, heat things up. I mean, I remember I was playing on, a Dell Inspiron, and my wife was playing on the first generation of iMac.
Oh, the quest for Rock Dalar was awful.
Yeah, so we were doing that quest, and you get to the part in Silithus, and a Horde Guild was just there, and because they thought it was funny, they would attack the quest NPC, and thus cause my wife to fail the game.
Yeah.
And they did this like 20 times.
Yeah, and then you had to wait for the respawn.
You had to wait, and they wouldn't go away. I got really mad, and I probably did slash spit at them. Going back now again, like 16 years, I probably did. I'm positive I did slash rude or something. I know I gestured at them. And part of that was to get them to flag for PvP because my guild was coming. But at the same time, yeah, I get that impulse is there, but it does more harm than good at this point. It's gotten to the point where it's just used in like massive targeted harassment campaigns, people slash spitting on other people just because they bought a storm mount or something. There's ideological like crusades about this. It has outlived its usefulness if it ever had usefulness. And I again, while I accept that there are times where people will reach for it, I don't think it's worth having. That is my take on it. Plus, it's just gross. It is just gross to think about somebody spitting on you. It's ugh.
I mean,
I do not want to have that thought in my head.
Quick aside, I remember back in the days of vanilla, like emotes were a mistake from the very beginning. Let me just go ahead and say there was a thing where you could macro all of the emotes into the Rogue's Sinister Strike and crash your world server. Like, I remember that because people would do that back in the day. Emotes were a mistake. But yeah, that's all I got to say about that. Liz, do you have anything else that you want to add?
The gaming community has grown increasingly toxic over the years, and part of that is because we have all of these easy communication tools, and it's just easier to be a jerk or to express an opinion without any fear of consequence. And we have these very toxic elements in the community. We don't need any extra tools that make it easier to just be mean to other players. And I mean, this is a tiny thing on the scale of bad things. This is a tiny thing, but it's like, it doesn't add anything to the gameplay. We don't need it. We don't need it.
Okay. I think we're all pretty much in agreement.
Yeah.
Someday we'll actually talk about my theory on how a lot of toxicity in the World of Warcraft community is a backlash to the fact that the World of Warcraft community has also gotten a lot more diverse. And it started off fairly diverse compared to like what a lot of gaming communities before it were like. And I think that you see that with any community when there's more diversity, there's almost always a backlash of people who are like, oh, you know, gatekeepy type garbage. But we don't have time for that because we're past the halfway mark and we haven't done a single email. So I kind of want to get some of them in, unfortunately. We have one more story to talk about. It was basically the fact that one of the investor groups at Activision Blizzard is not happy with how the Activision Blizzard board has been handling the lawsuit from California's Department of, I always want to say Fair Employment and Housing, but I can't remember if it's Fair Employment and Housing or Employment
and Fair Department Housing. Of Employment and Housing, DEH.
Oh.
Okay. But I thought it was Employment and Fair Housing.
Maybe.
But doesn't.
I think it has an F. Fair is in there somewhere.
Yeah, but regardless, they're not happy with the lawsuit, and they don't feel like the Activision board has been handling it very well. I tend to agree. I feel like there's definitely room for improvement there. But, I mean, I'm still much more interested in what the various employees of Blizzard have to say than a bunch of investors who will make money regardless.
Although I would like to point out that the one thing that I thought was really important from that is even they are calling for the board of directors to have an employee elected representative, which is pretty much unheard of in corporate structure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like that's the board and the investors calling for that. Like that's not a joke. Like that's a big important thing. So,
but at this point we are going to move on and do some emails and questions because I mean, that's one of the things we do here. And also because it means we'll get to interact with you guys some. If you have a question for the show, you can email it to us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com and basically say it's for the show. Or you can do that thing where you say, you know, for any show. And then, you know, Joe and I get tense with each other. But either way, we will look at it. If you want to use our Discord, we have two channels on Discord we look at for questions. One is the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel, which we look at first because, quite frankly, the patrons keep the lights on, so we'd like to do that for them. The other question, if you're not a patron, though, we totally understand not everybody can be. We do also have the Q Questions channel, which we do look in for questions from time to time. So usually what happens is Joe reads them, but now that Liz is here, we can have both of them read them, and that way nobody's throat gets as dried out as it might otherwise. So I'm going to ask Liz to start us off by reading the first question.
All right. Longtime WoW player, started in 2005 and have recently started playing Final Fantasy XIV. I started in May and have 200 plus hours played and hit max level on two jobs. They have the concept of the main scenario quest line, which all players must play through to experience the story. Experience is adjusted so that if you just did the main if you just did the main scenario quest with no side quests, you would hit max level. Do you think that Blizzard could adopt a system to a better format a cohesive story from levels 1 to 50, also from 50 to 60? That way people don't miss out on quests that are potentially important to the storyline. Thanks, Mareblood, Whisperwind, Dintarg.
Joe?
They could. But WoW is a very different game than I think Final Fantasy XIV is in a lot of regards. WoW has always been a game of quest hubs and sort of exploring the area throughout it. Like, you can speed through Final Fantasy XIV's main story quests, and yes, there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of hubs that you get to visit, but I can tell you, as somebody who's done this myself, while it's great, I know nothing about the areas that I'm in. Like, once I move to somewhere else or go somewhere else, or I think I'm where I left my bunny barge. She's in a quest in the frozen north. I'm waiting to do the next part of my MSQ so I can move on. And it involves an instance at a higher level. But that's the other problem with it, is that those MSQs also involve direct things with the roulettes and the dungeons, and not everybody wants to do that. Whereas in WoW, there is that option where if you don't want to do a dungeon, you don't necessarily have to. Now, could they streamline the storytelling experience in some of the older expansions? Probably. But I think that the quest hubs are made specifically to force you to go and explore the areas of World of Warcraft in general. And some of the most interesting story bits happen in those side quests with those side NPCs. So could they do it? Yes. Will they do it? I don't know. And I don't know if there's a way that you could do it that doesn't sort of lose the feel of WoW questing. So, complicated way of saying yes, but I don't know.
Okay, Liz, do you have anything to say?
I kind of wonder if they're sort of doing this in their own way, and kind of like how we have a big Covenant quest line and how we have this big Patch 9-1 quest line that kind of everyone is progressing through, and you're all kind of moving through the same story. But it's just, that's not everything. It's not even how you level, because you can't get into the Covenant story until you're max level.
Well, but the first time.
No, you can't start the Covenant stuff. Even if you do Threads of Fate,
you still have to do the go to these different places and help them thing before you can get into the main story.
You have to level to 60 before you can do the main storyline. So even if you do that, but not with leveling, but to try and tell a coherent story, they've been doing these coherent storylines, which is maybe a little bit the same thing. I like it that they have this coherent narrative that we're all playing through. I think it does help the storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, if you think back to like the last few expansions, they've all had variations on that, like the Legion Covenants, Order Halls. The Legion story was basically your class had its own campaign through the game. And Battle for Azeroth was much more, you know, Horde and Alliance each had one. So I do think there's been some movement towards that sort of quest storytelling, but it definitely isn't the same kind of thing as what they do in Final Fantasy. And that's probably for the best for both games. Quite frankly, you don't necessarily want Final Fantasy to play just like World of Warcraft, and vice versa. You don't want WoW to just suddenly be a Final Fantasy clone. Let them do their storytelling in their own way. That would be that. But that's all I have to say on that one. So, Joe, if you don't mind reading the next one.
Not at all. This one comes from our good friend Vertigree. Mechanic question for the Blizzard Watch podcast. To the Exalted Watchers, how does the weekly lockout work in the old raid content that is different sized versions? I've just been bamboozled by trying to switch difficulties of Heart of Fear and thought I'd ask the question of yourselves. That's actually really good because I think I actually forgot how that works on the older raids.
It's different depending on different types of expansions, quite frankly. For instance, Heart of Fear is a Mists of Pandaria one. And in the middle of Mists of Pandaria, they changed the way raid difficulty worked on the last raid to bump it to the way we see it now, where you have the different raid sizes. And they then changed it again for flex raiding. So there's, using Mists of Pandaria as an example, Mists of Pandaria was all still LFR, normal, and heroic. And those were the difficulties. There was no mythic until Siege of Orgrimmar, and mythic was introduced. They literally changed heroic to mythic. Normal became heroic. There still was LFR difficulty, and then there was like a flex difficulty they put in. And those lockouts are all saved. Like, you can't do them. You can't just do Heart of Fear and then go to the Siege of Orgrimmar and try and do Siege of Orgrimmar the same way. The lockouts are differently saved. I'm pretty sure that the lockouts in Mists of Pandaria were all exclusive. Like, I don't think you could do like you can do in Legion. If you do Legion, here's another example for Legion. If you want to go do Tomb of Sargeras in Legion, you can do it LFR, flex, normal. I mean, flex, heroic, and mythic. You can do them all because flex became normal. You can do all of them in one run. Like, you can just change, like, you can basically just change the difficulty. It will make you leave and go back because it starts the whole thing over. The lockouts are completely unique, but you can do all four of them. Like, I have done this. I've done Tomb of Sargeras in all of them. I've done Antorus in all of them. That's still the case also for Battle for Azeroth raids, but Battle for Azeroth raids are not on the legacy loot system yet. So if you do the Battle for Azeroth loot raids, the loot drops the way it would if it was still a current raid. So you might get nothing because it's all personal loot. You might get nothing for clearing a Battle for Azeroth raid, but you can do it, and you can do them up to like LFR, normal, heroic, and mythic, all separated. You can do that in Legion, and you can do that in Battle for Azeroth. Going back, Mists of Pandaria was a big transitional one. Cataclysm, I believe the lockout system in Cataclysm, which was still at the time, it was like, I still think it was 10 and 25. I think Mists of Pandaria was the first one that tried to not do 10 and 25 anymore, but I might be wrong about that. No, I am wrong about this. Wrath, I'm pretty sure Wrath was the last time we had 10, 25, and then normal and heroic. So if you look at, say,
Flexible raid tier was introduced in patch 5.4.
Okay, so Mists of Pandaria. So before that, you had 10 and 25 man, and that's how it worked. And that's how Mists worked up until Siege of Orgrimmar. And I don't know if they backed it to other stuff. I'm pretty sure they still have normal and heroic for earlier Mists stuff. But going back to Wrath, everything depended on the raid. Like, for instance, Ulduar. And Ulduar's been changed again because they did the time walking for Ulduar, and they totally jiggered around with it. So Ulduar is its own special beast, where it's completely flexed out, and you basically just all the 10 and 25 man loot drops. And remember that Ulduar didn't have difficulties. It had hard modes on specific fights.
Mm-hmm.
So the way it used to be is you'd go in on 10 or 25, and then you deliberately make a fight harder by doing something specific, like blow up XT's heart before he got to a certain point. Now he's doesn't have a heart anymore, and now he's much, much harder to kill.
Not killing that trees for, what's her name? Why can't I think of her name now?
Ianar.
Ianar, yep.
Or dooming Hodir and just, you know, trying to get him down before that, you know, the chest got hit. Or the three of them, the three of the guys, you could do them in different orders, and they'd get harder depending on which guy you killed first.
Mm-hmm.
The Iron Council, I want to call them.
There
were various ways, or you could do like No Lights, Yogg-Saron, where you didn't have the keepers help you at all. And the one for General Vizax, really, really annoying. But the point being, since there was no difficulty modes in Ulduar, it worked differently, and it works even more differently now because they've changed it for time walking. But the Trial of Crusader had 10 man and 25 man, and then it had normal and heroic for both. So there was 10 normal, 10 heroic, 10 heroic and 25 normal dropped the same gear, and same level of gear, not the same gear, but the same eye level. And then the 25 heroic. So you had three tiers of gear and four different instances you could run, and you still can run. If you go do Trial of Crusader right now, you can run all four. You could run 10 man normal, 10 man heroic, 25 man normal, and 25 man heroic. You can just keep resetting the dungeon and going back in. And that's what got preserved for Ice Crown Citadel. And that's the lockouts for Ice Crown Citadel. If you do Ice Crown Citadel, it's 10 normal, 10 heroic, 25, you know, 25 man normal, 25 heroic. And you can do all four in a run. If you switch it while you're in there, there will be problems. And I believe you can actually get yourself in a situation where you can't go into the heroic version if you killed bosses first on normal or vice versa. If you kill bosses on heroic and then switch it to normal, that'll be it. You can't switch back to heroic. It's very confusing, and it's dungeon by dungeon, unfortunately, raid by raid. So yeah, I just talked for a long time. I'm sorry, but it is not simple. And it is not consistent because each expansion did something different with raid sizes. I'll also say that the Warlords of Draenor raids, you can basically do everything I just said for Legion, but they are extremely picky. Even now, it's very easy to lose on the fights on the hardest difficulty, even though you do more than enough damage to clear them, because if you do them too fast...
Yeah, mechanics still kill.
Yeah, something will bug out. So be aware of that if you are trying to do multiple, say, Hellfire Citadel runs. When you're doing the highest difficulty, you have to be real careful to actually pay attention to the mechanics and still try to complete them somewhat. Gorfiend, for instance, you can make Gorfiend just despawn if you hit him too hard. I have done this to myself. It's quite annoying. So you kind of have to take it easy and actually pay attention to the mechanics, and then you can just kill him after, like, you get it to a certain point. If you just insta-kill him, then they will bug the fight out. That's not related, but there. So I hope that was in some way useful. If you've got anything to add, Liz?
I think really the point is that every raid is kind of a special snowflake, and there's no standard rule that applies to everything, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, because they kept changing the way they were doing raiding as the expansions went on. Like, for instance, there's no difficulties for Molten Core. You just walk in. There's one raid. Every vanilla raid, there's just the one raid. You just walk in and do whatever. And that's also the case. I think that's the case for Burning Crusade, isn't it?
Yep.
I think there's like there's two 10-man raids that just are 10-man. There's Karazhan and Zul'aman. And then everything else is 25. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And Wrath was the first time they started doing like variable raid sizes. So it gets more complex as you progress through the expansions. But I think that answers that. And we've got enough time to do at least one more. So, Liz?
I'm going to skip to the question by 6K because I think the other one may take a little time.
Okay.
So question for the podcast. Now that patch 9.2 isn't coming out until 2023, which, okay, 6K, I think that may be like a slight exaggeration. We'll see, but I think it's a little bit of an exaggeration. Which of the previous expansions would you like for them to bring back in their classic series to help pass the time? Which one do you think still has enough content to help fill the new 5-year release schedule? Again, I think that's an exaggeration. We slowed down development, but I don't think we're going that long. But we did have a long wait between the launch of Shadowlands and 9.1, like a really long wait. So yeah, what do y'all think would be a good time fill from the past?
Cataclysm.
Yeah.
Cataclysm. Really? Cataclysm?
Cataclysm, yes. Had a ton of content.
Yeah, because it's got the entire different world.
I mean,
it's got all the quests from like 1 to like 60 that were
redone.
Redone. And then you can also do, but here's the thing, when I say Cataclysm, I don't mean tack Cataclysm on to any of the current classic servers.
Create its own.
Yeah, create Cataclysm servers that are just Cataclysm, because it would be annoying if you are the kind of person who likes playing, say, you know, original, what do they call it? A legacy era or whatever they're calling it now for, I don't know what they're calling it, just WoW Classic.
I think it's just WoW Classic, and then there's Burning Crusade Classic, and there's Sephiroth.
Yeah. And so if you were someone who's playing in those, you want to stay in those. You want to, like, you know, because you want the world to be that world. And I don't think anybody would appreciate having Classic come along and change that world. The whole point of WoW Classic is to have pre-Cataclysm WoW back. So don't tack it on to any current servers. Make new Cataclysm only servers and let people start at level 1 on those servers and play through the whole thing. And I think people that did that would get a much better game experience out of it, because fully half of Cataclysm's development was the 1 to 60 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's my vote. There's a lot of content. There's a lot of stuff to do. There's Deathwing, who is super cool, although I have some problems with him, but you know, big dragon threatening the world. That's kind of cool. And you'd get to actually see, you'd get to see him doing more stuff, because he does a lot of stuff to the world that you don't get to see if you were max level at the time. You know, if you were max level and you went into Cataclysm, you missed half of Cataclysm.
Cataclysm also added some really unique, fun quests. I mean, okay, I'm not Cataclysm's biggest fan, but I have to admit, a lot of the old world stuff, the quest design, Blizzard's quest design, has improved dramatically over the years. The difference between old world questing and Cataclysm questing is gigantic. And they took a lot of fun directions with quests. Like, you have the quest, The Day Deathwing Came, that was in Cataclysm, where you're, like, basically participating in a story that's being told about how these guys fought off Deathwing and were super awesome, and it's just exaggerated and ridiculous and fun. So you have things like that that you never saw in vanilla, in the original kind of questing thing.
And the Rathion introductory quests, where he's like, you know, you're helping the little baby dragon egg. There's the I want to say, I don't remember if Johnny Awesome, I'm pretty sure he was a Cataclysm quest.
I think he was also.
The Johnny Awesome quest line, if you're Horde and you don't play the Johnny Awesome quest line, you are depriving yourself of an amazing experience.
Not just Johnny Awesome, but that whole thing surrounding it, with like, that was a lot of tongue-in-cheek, like, you know, adventurer type thing. I mean, including the Drowning Death Knight, because that was a thing that happened later on.
Yeah, so there's a lot of Cataclysm that I think if players had gotten to see it at the time, they would have been like, ooh, wow. One thing it did actually, too, that I think, like, in Mists of Pandaria, we got to see Garrosh unravel. But the stage for that was set in Cataclysm, and it was set in the Horde leveling experience.
Yeah, it really was.
And when you, like, get to see, like, there's a quest in the one north of Thousand Needles. Oh, bloody heck. Not Desolus, but, like, the mountain. Stone Talon. The Stone Talon Mountain quests that you do as Horde really do set up that how Garrosh has changed the Horde. And it's really something I felt like people would have gotten a lot out of if they'd seen it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's one of those things where Cataclysm gets a bad rap, but I would love to see people experience it now, looking like with what we know happened afterwards, go back and play it and see if they still feel the same way. The other one that I think would be a good candidate for the classic treatment is, I want to say, Mists of Pandaria. And I think it was very popular at the time, but I also think, and Red said this in chat, and I agree, that it showcased a very conscientious effort of quest design and storytelling through zones in the game. And I think it started with, you know, they really started getting a feel for that kind of in Wrath of the Lich King. But Mists is arguably where all of that sort of like came to a head. And I think going back and experiencing that without just blowing through it is sort of a big thing. And yes, you can do that now in the leveling experience, but it feels different because everything has shifted, talents have moved around and stuff like that. Experiencing it with all of its heavy storytelling, all of the remarks about like the Shah and learning how things get twisted and the impact that we have as warring nations and warring and groups of people on other folks that had nothing to do with our fight to begin with. It was a very powerful, very important, I think, expansion that I would love to see get the classic treatment so people could actually like spend some time with it and, you know, go back through those quests and again, look at it now with what we know happens after and sort of like see where those threads were kind of starting to come together. Because like you said, like Garrosh becoming unhinged started before that, but there's stuff that happened in Mists of Pandaria that moves forward, like the Rathian stuff, a lot of stuff with Anduin, like the ton of stuff with the Horde in particular outside of Garrosh that now you can go back and look at and have a completely fresh look at. So what about you, Liz?
I don't think I have anything to add that hasn't been talked about. Like, Cataclysm isn't my favorite expansion, but now hearing Matt talk about it, I think it wasn't my favorite expansion in large part because of the gameplay changes, because that was when they switched over to talent trees as we know them now, where you just pick from three instead of fleshing out a tree in a more kind of traditional RPG style. And I really liked the old way. I still really like the classic talent trees and that idea and how you could customize with them. But they changed gameplay so much in Cataclysm that the game didn't feel familiar to me anymore. And it wasn't...
Weren't you playing a paladin?
I was playing a paladin, yes.
Yeah, every paladin says that because they really? Bought holy power. Oh yeah, Alex used to complain continuously about Cataclysm. They brought in holy power. They made it... like I remember you used to say, what am I playing, a rogue now? I got complicated all of a sudden. And yeah, I think that that is something like that's a real example of how specific changes to a class can really affect that class and make it feel different. I mean, it was also, I think, when they'd gotten rid of armor penetration in the previous expansion, and as a result, they had Colossus Smash, which kind of came in and replaced it for Warriors. And that changed Warriors so much that I remember spending like I spent a great deal of time up until the end of Mists of Pandaria, just writing articles that were essentially Colossus Smash has got to go because it's destroying the Fury rotation. It has to go. And when they changed it to not be what it was before, I was like, yes, that's. And so, yeah, I totally agree with you that I can see why that you would feel that way. Yeah, that's just, I just wanted to say that. Paladins had it rough.
I mean, I actually quit the game for a while in Cataclysm. I was like, okay, this has changed so much. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why I have this character. I don't know what this character is anymore. And it just, it killed off a lot of the fun. So I took a break until this. But yeah, looking back and being more familiar with the class as it is now, which is still has a lot of similarities. Cataclysm had a lot of great storytelling. And the old world in particular had a lot of great new stories that a lot of us didn't experience at the time because we were already max level and continued instead of going back.
All right. I think that's pretty much it, though. Joe?
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add. If you want me to do the outro or if there's anything else you want to say for final thoughts, let it fly now.
That'll go after. Go do the thing. We tell people what they can do.
That's fair. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Since he gave me the idea of the final thoughts thing that we do over on Lore Watch, I think it is a good thing to bring over here now that we've got three people again. So I'm going to ask you two, and we're going to start with Liz. If they decided to do the alternate expansion track idea, where they, instead of doing, say, Wrath of the Lich King, they did another expansion instead of Burning Crusade, after Burning Crusade Classic, what would you want it to be about?
My gosh, you're asking me really hard questions here. But there are just so many options. There are so many different directions we could go off. And what if you had, like, Burning Crusade, you go from that straight into, like, Warlords of Draenor experience, and you go from our Draenor, the modern Draenor in Outland, and then you went into, like, this alternate universe, and you did that very quickly, and you tied into this. That would be a really different experience, putting something like that back to back. But there's just so much out there. We could have gone from Burning Crusade into something that explored demons more and explored, the place the demon souls go where they don't, what's the word?
Mardoon or the Fell?
The Twisting Nether?
Twisting Nether, no. Like, kind of explore the origins of these demons and how all of this came to be, which we're kind of starting to get into now in Shadowlands, but there are all kinds of threads you could pull that would have been a good tie into Burning Crusade.
Okay, Joe?
Yeah, and I think Burning Crusade was really, I agree with Liz, is one of those points where, like, the game could have gone anywhere. And there was so much possibility, and we went from that to the Wrath of the Lich King, which wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but it wasn't the only option that they had available to them. We could have done more stuff with the Ethereals and learned more about Koresh. We could have done more stuff with the elves right then and there. We did so much with the trolls at that point, and why not do some stuff with the elves early on? We could have explored more of the Naga, which we really didn't do a whole lot with until Cataclysm, honestly. Like, they were there. They were always a threat, but it wasn't something that was fully explored. I mean, technically until Legion or Battle for Azeroth, excuse me. And even then, like, it was just little bits and pieces throughout that point. I mean, going after Queen Azjara would have been a really interesting direction to go. Like, yeah, we cleaned up Outland. We got all these allies back now. We can go back and clean things up. Man, these Naga are really annoying. Man, you know what? That's right. We forgot about Queen Azjara. She's right in our backyard. Like, literally, we have a major city that butts up against a place which is kind of a base of her power. Why don't we go deal with this? And that would have been interesting, too, instead of waiting until, you know, however many years, a decade later, to even consider going after her or dealing with her. And how would that have changed things? And I think I would have liked to have seen more with that, because, again, I'm a stan for Queen Azjara. I think she's one of the best villains I've ever had, and I would have liked more of her from the very, very beginning, especially coming off of Burning Crusade, where you had all the stuff with Vash and being sent to go help Illidan. That would have been great!
Okay, cool. For me, it would have been the Emerald Dream. They were working on an Emerald Dream expansion, and then they just didn't do it. And I've always wondered why. I've always wanted to know what it could have been. I think in a lot of ways, the Emerald Dream is going to end up being a lot like the opposite of the Shadowlands, where it's like a place of life where we're going to go to multiple different realms within it and, you know, so forth. But I would have liked to have seen the version we would have got if they'd made it in 2009, 2010. But that's the show, guys. Thank you very much for being here with us as we do the Blizzard Watch thing. We're going to be back next week, and so we hope you're here with us. Bye, everybody. You guys should say bye, too.
Bye.
Mom Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.